Welcome back to another Storytime with Daddy. I am so excited to record another episode of this podcast today. And we are not going to finish Black Beauty. We are going to change stories. And I'm really excited about reading the story we're going to choose. I've never read this story before. It's called Danny, the Champion of the World by Roald Dahl. So let's get started. Today we'll be reading the first few chapters. Chapter 1, The Filling Station. When I was 4 months old, my mother died suddenly, and my father was left to look after me all by himself. I had no brothers or sisters, so all through my boyhood, from the age of 4 months onward, there was just two of us, my father and me. We lived in an old gypsy caravan behind a filling station. My father owned the filling station and the caravan and a small meadow behind, but that was about all he owned in the world. It was a very small filling station on a small country road surrounded by fields and woody hills. While I was still a baby, my father washed me and fed me and changed my diapers and did all the million things a mother normally does for her child. That is not an easy task for a man, especially when he has to earn his living at the same time by repairing automobile engines and serving customers with gasoline. But my father didn't seem to mind. I think that all the love he had felt for my mother when she was alive, he now lavished upon me. During my early years, I never had a moment's unhappiness or illness. I was now a scruffy little boy, as you can see, with grease and oil all over me by the age of 5, but that was because I spent all day in the workshop helping my father with the automobiles. The filling station itself had only 2 pumps. There was a wooden shed behind the pumps that served as the office. There was nothing in the office except an old table and a cash register to put the money into. It was one of those where you pressed a button and a bell rang and the drawer shot out with a terrific bang. I used to love that. The square brick building to the right of the office was the workshop. My father built that himself with loving care, and it was the only really solid thing on the place. "We are engineers, you and I," he used to say to me. "We earn our living by repairing engines, and we can't do good work in a rotten workshop." It was a fine workshop, big enough to take one automobile comfortably and leave plenty of room around the sides for working. It had a telephone so that customers could ring up and arrange to bring their cars in for repair. The caravan was our house and our home. It was a real old gypsy wagon and with big wheels and fine patterns painted all over it in yellow and red and blue. My father said it was at least 150 years old. Many gypsy children, he said, had been born in it and had grown up within its wooden walls. With a horse to pull it, the old caravan must have wandered for thousands of miles along the roads and lanes of England. But now its wanderings were over, and because of the wooden spokes in the wheels were beginning to rot, my father had propped it up underneath with bricks. There was only one room in the caravan, and it wasn't much bigger than a fair-sized modern bathroom. It was a narrow room, the shape of the caravan itself, and against the back wall were 2 bunk beds, one above the other. The top one was my father's, the bottom was mine. Although we had electric lights in the workshop, we were not allowed to have them in the caravan. The electricity people said it was unsafe to put wires into something as old and rickety as that. So we got our heat and light in much the same way as the gypsies had done years ago. There was a wood-burning stove with a chimney that went up through the roof, and this kept us warm in winter. There was a kerosene burner on which to boil a kettle or cook a stew, and there was a kerosene lamp hanging from the ceiling. When I needed a bath, my father would heat a kettle of water and pour it into a basin. Then he would strip me naked and scrub me all over standing up. This, I think, got me just as clean as if I were washing in a bathtub. Probably cleaner because I didn't finish up sitting in my own dirty water. For furniture, we had 2 chairs and a small table, and those, apart from a tiny chest of drawers, were all the home comforts we possessed. They were all we needed. The lavatory was a funny little wooden hut standing in the meadow way back of the caravan. It was fine in summertime, but I can tell you that sitting out there on a snowy day in winter was like sitting in an icebox. Immediately behind the caravan was an old apple tree. It bore fine apples that ripened in the middle of September. You could go on picking them for the next 4 or 5 weeks. Some of the boughs of the tree hung right over the caravan, and when the wind blew the apples down in the night, they often landed on our roof. I would hear them going thump, thump, thump above my head as I lay in my bunk. But those noises never frightened me because I knew exactly what was making them. I really loved living in that gypsy caravan. I loved it especially in the evenings when I was tucked up in my bunk and my father was telling me stories. The kerosene lamp was turned low, and I could see lumps of wood glowing red hot in the old stove, and wonderful it was to be lying there snug and warm in my bunk in that little room. Most wonderful of all was the feeling that when I went to sleep, my father would still be there very close to me, sitting in his chair by the fire or lying in the bunk above my own. Chapter 2. The Big Friendly Giant. My father, without the slightest doubt, was the most marvelous and exciting father any boy ever had. You might think, if you didn't know him well, that he was a stern and serious man. He wasn't. He was actually a wildly funny person. What made him appear so serious was the fact that he never smiled with his mouth. He did it all with his eyes. He had brilliant blue eyes, and when he thought of something funny, his eyes would flash, and if you looked carefully, you could actually see a tiny little golden spark dancing in the middle of each eye. But the mouth never moved. I was glad my father was an eye smiler. It meant he never gave me a fake smile, because it's impossible to make your eyes twinkle if you aren't feeling twinkly yourself. A mouth smile is different. You can fake a mouth smile any time you want, simply by moving your lips. I've also learned that a real mouth smile always has an eye smile to go with it. So watch out, I say, when someone smiles at you with his mouth but his eyes stay the same. It's sure to be a phony. My father was not what you could call an educated man. I doubt he had read 20 books in his life. But he was a marvelous storyteller. He used to make up a bedtime story for me every single night, and the best ones were turned into serials and went on for many, many nights running. One of them, which must have gone on for at least 50 nights, was about an enormous fellow called the Big Friendly Giant, or the BFG for short. The BFG was 3 times as tall as an ordinary man, and his hands were as big as wheelbarrows. He lived in a vast underground caravan, a vast underground cavern not far from our filling station, and he only came out into the open when it was dark. Inside the cavern, he had a powder factory where he made more than 100 different kinds of magic powder. Occasionally, as he told his stories, my father would stride up and down, waving his arms and waggling his fingers. But most of the time, he would sit close to me on the edge of my bunk and speak very softly. "The Big Friendly Giant makes his magic powders out of the dreams that children dream when they are asleep," he said. "How?" I asked. "Tell me how, Dad." "Dreams, my love, are very mysterious things. They float around in the night air like little clouds searching for sleeping people." "Can you see them?" I asked. "Nobody can see them." "Then how does the Big Friendly Giant catch them?" "Ah," my father said, "that is the interesting part. A dream, you see, as it goes drifting through the night air, makes a tiny little buzzing humming sound, a sound so soft and low it is impossible for ordinary people to hear it. But the BFG can hear it easily. His sense of hearing is absolutely fantastic." I loved the intent look on my father's face when he was telling a story. His face was pale and still and distant, unconscious of everything around him. "The BFG," he said, "can hear the tread of a ladybug's footsteps as she walks across a leaf. He can hear the whispering of ants as they scurry around in the soil talking to one another. He can hear the sudden shrill cry of pain a tree gives out when a woodsman cuts it into it with an axe. Ah, yes, my darling, there is a whole world of sound around us that we cannot hear because our ears are simply not sensitive enough." "What happens when he catches the dreams?" I asked. "He imprisons them in glass bottles and screws the tops down tight," my father said. "He has thousands of these bottles in his cave." "Does he catch bad dreams as well as good ones?" "Yes," my father said, "he catches both, but he only uses the good ones in his powders." "What does he do with the bad ones?" "He explodes them." It is impossible to tell you how much I loved my father. When he was sitting close to me on my bunk, I would reach out and slide my hand into his, and then he would fold his long fingers around my fist, holding it tight. "What does the BFG do with his powders after he has made them?" I asked. "In the dead of night," my father said, "he goes prowling through the villages, searching for houses where children are asleep. Because of his great height, he can reach windows that are 2 and even 3 flights up, and when he finds a room with a sleeping child, he opens his suitcase." "His suitcase?" I said. "The BFG always carries a suitcase and a blowpipe," my father said. The blowpipe is as long as a lamppost. The suitcase is for the powders. So he opens the suitcase and selects exactly the right powder, and he puts it into the blowpipe, and he slides the blowpipe in through the open window, and poof! He blows in the powder, and the powder floats around the room, and the child breathes it in. And then what? I asked. And then, Danny, the child begins to dream a marvelous and fantastic dream. And when the dream reaches its most marvelous and fantastic moment, then the magic powder really takes over, and suddenly the dream is not a dream any longer, but a real happening. And the child is not asleep in bed. He is fully awake and is actually in the place of the dream and is taking part in the whole thing. I mean, really taking part in real life. More about that tomorrow. It's getting late. Good night, Danny. Go to sleep. My father kissed me, and then he turned down the wick of the little kerosene lamp until the flame went out. He seated himself in front of the wood stove, which now made a lovely red glow in the dark room. "Dad," I whispered. "What is it? Have you ever actually seen the big friendly giant?" "Once," my father said. "Only once."
"You did? Where?"
"I was out behind the caravan," my father said, "and it was a clear moonlit night. And I happened to look up, and suddenly I saw this tremendous tall person running along the crest of the hill. He had a queer, long, striding, lolloping gait, and his black cloak was streaming out behind him like the wings of a bird. There was a big suitcase in one hand and a blowpipe in the other. And when he came to the high hawthorn hedge at the end of the field, he just strode over it as though it wasn't there." "Were you frightened, Dad?"
"No," my father said. "It was thrilling to see him, and a little eerie, but I wasn't frightened."
Go to sleep now. Good night. And that's where we're going to stop the story for this time. I really like the beginning of this story. It sounds like Danny and his father have a really special life together. I'm glad we're reading this book. Okay, I love you, sweetie. Good night.